This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The Environmental Protection Agency's move to end the Clean Power Plan is the Trump administration's latest attempt to support the struggling coal industry. The Department of Energy is also pushing a new way to subsidize coal power. But as Glynis Board reports, a new study suggests that market forces, not regulations, will still make more coal power plants in the region vulnerable.
Ohio Valley lawmakers and industry leaders overwhelmingly support the move to dismantle the Clean Power Plan. Chris Hamilton of the West Virginia Coal Association says EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt's announcement is welcomed relief.
His actions here to officially stop and reverse the Clean Power Plan from going forward is without question one of the more significant developments that the coal industry has ever experienced.
The Obama-era plan required states to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. An analysis shows Ohio Valley states would have needed the biggest cuts. Pruitt chose to announce the repeal in eastern Kentucky.
That rule really was about picking winners and losers. You know, regulatory power should not be used by any regulatory body to pick winners and losers.
But clean energy advocates say the Trump administration is attempting to do just that by intervening in energy markets to prop up fossil fuels. Pruitt's action comes as the Department of Energy is proposing a new rule that would require utilities to pay coal and nuclear plants for all their costs and for the power they produce. The DOE says those baseload generators make the electrical grid more resilient. Senior energy analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists, Jeremy Richardson, disagrees.
The fact is that a very, very small percentage of electricity outages are caused by lack of fuel.
Richardson is also from West Virginia.
Brother, son, and grandson of West Virginia coal miners.
He says Energy Secretary Rick Perry wants to help utilities to afford more expensive fuel like coal, even though the department's recent grid study makes no indication that such measures are needed.
It's a completely bogus problem, and they're trying to say that these coal and nuclear plants that are currently uneconomic should be entitled to additional payments. And who do you think is going to be on the hook for those payments? It's the ratepayers.
Richardson authored a study released this week that looks at the economic forces driving power decisions. He found that more than a third of coal-fired plants in the U.S. are either slated to retire or are no longer economical, given cheaper fuel options like natural gas. West Virginia has the highest concentration of these economically vulnerable facilities. Richardson says regardless of regulatory changes, coal will still feel the heat from competition. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Glynis Board.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. In early August, the Parkersburg City Council shot down an ordinance that would have protected residents from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Since then, the City Council in Fairmont moved in the opposite direction, reviving their Human Rights Commission. Dave Mistich takes a look at how the situation in Parkersburg played out and what non-discrimination ordinances mean without those protections on the state level.
Equality's what we're fighting for. 5, 6, 7, 8. Fight the bigots, stop the hate.
Before a Parkersburg City Council meeting last month, LGBTQ rights advocates held a rally to let members of the council know that, despite the failure of a non-discrimination ordinance, they'll continue to fight for equal rights in their hometown.
Stand up, fight back! Human rights are under attack! What do we do? Stand up, fight back!
One of those who rallied was Doug Evans, a recent transplant to Parkersburg from Charleston, who said he and his partner had trouble finding a place to live.
At every turn, every time I went to go speak to someone, it became an issue that the fact that I was in a same-sex relationship. I had people who offered apartments and then withdrew offers. I had people who, we were to the point that we were ready to sign leases, and then they backed out. I mean, it was an absolute nightmare.
When discussion of the non-discrimination ordinance, or NDO, came up this past spring, opposition sprung up from some expected parties. Cami Murray with the LGBTQ advocacy group Fairness Parkersburg points to some of the opposition she and her group faced.
And we thought maybe we had a chance since we had a new council. And I think it probably would have went all right, but Alan Witt and the West Virginia Family Policy Council got involved and got these churches, not the churches, these evangelical fundamentalist churches involved.
One of those churches was the Rock Family Worship Center, a church that calls itself, quote, progressive on its website and elsewhere online, but also preaches an anti-gay agenda at its services. Dennis Morgan is an associate pastor there.
We took a stance, surely from the Christian standpoint, is when you begin opening the doors for the LGBT community to come in and have an option really to share bathrooms, there's a perversion that takes place that we didn't want to be a part of. We didn't want to see that door opened up in our community.
On the same night in mid-September, the Evans, Murray, and other members of the Parkersburg LGBTQ community and their allies rallied against the failure of their NDO. Fairmont City Council passed an ordinance reviving a human rights commission that laid dormant for decades. The commission can make recommendations to the city council and, in other cities, has helped shape NDO ordinances. But Fairness West Virginia Executive Director Andrew Schneider says Fairmont's recent action stops short of truly protecting those in the gay and trans communities.
What it does not do is it does not give victims of LGBT discrimination a legal cause of action to go to take their offender to court when they are discriminated against. So we do not consider it to be a non-discrimination ordinance. We consider it to be a non-discrimination resolution.
Currently, only 10 municipalities have NDOs in place that would allow for plaintiffs to bring lawsuits against those who discriminate against them based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Those include Charleston, where two suits have been brought against employers for discrimination. Huntington, Harpers Ferry, Thurmond, Sutton, Lewisburg, Martinsburg, Shepherdstown, Charlestown, and Wheeling have also passed housing and employment protections for the LGBTQ community. Wheeling Mayor Glenn Elliott says passing statewide non-discrimination legislation in West Virginia can have an impact far beyond the boundaries of a town or city, even the state. For him, it's about busting up stereotypes of West Virginia that translate to the state and its residents being seen as backward or closed-minded.
We had coverage by Reuters of an international story basically based in Wheeling, which was a positive story. I can't think of many other positive stories about West Virginia cities that have made international news in my lifetime. That's something that is important, and it shows that if you do the right thing, you know, if you defy those stereotypes that the rest of the world has in their mind about West Virginia, you're going to be rewarded for it. And I think the city of Wheeling reflects very, very well. Since we passed that, I'm proud to have been a part of it. We have more work to do to become a more inclusive city, but that's a big first step.
More recent analysis from Reuters shows that 19 states have passed laws protecting their residents from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Two other states have passed laws protecting constituents based only on the basis of sexual orientation. But as Elliott points out, no such legislation across the entire state of West Virginia provides those protections. But municipal ordinances like the one in Wheeling and other cities provide a course of action on the local level. Delegate Barbara Fleshauer of Monongalia County explains.
It would be geographical, and municipalities do have the right to govern things like that in their district. And actually, there's really a long tradition of cities and states passing ordinances. I mean, if you think about it, there isn't any protection nationally either. And so there have been many, many states that have passed ordinances and many, many cities.
Fleshauer has repeatedly introduced legislation on the state level known as ENDA, the Employment and Housing Non-Discrimination Act. Bills like hers have failed to gain traction in the legislature, but Fleshauer says she plans to keep fighting for the cause in Charleston. For now, she encourages municipalities to take it up on their own.
What my point is that we have a long tradition of doing this on race, on gender. This is a very normal way to proceed. When you're hitting a brick wall, maybe at the state level or the national level, you can at least do something in your own backyard.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Parkersburg.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:54. There's a chance of rain in the east today. Partly cloudy skies, highs in the 60s and 70s. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy skies with highs in the 70s and low 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. When you think of cave creatures, shrimp probably don't come to mind. But as WFPL's Ashley Stevens found out, there's a species of shrimp only found in Kentucky caves. That shrimp has a turbulent conservation legacy that continues today, and it relates to the quality of water we drink.
This is where the scientists in the 1880s first found the shrimp and described it to the world.
You're standing in history.
I'm standing in history, you said?
Yes.
You might think we're somewhere tropical, but in fact, I'm ankle-deep in slick cave mud after about a three-mile underground trek at Mammoth Cave. Ecologist Kurt Helf and Mammoth Cave specialist Rick Toomey are bouncing the beams of a small, high-powered flashlight over a clear pool. They're looking for the Kentucky cave shrimp, though they probably aren't going to find it. Here's Toomey.
They are difficult to find. They are small, they are somewhat transparent, and you are trying to find them in a large, dark stream.
Kentucky cave shrimp, which are only found in the Mammoth Cave area, are a curiosity. According to Helf and Toomey, most people are surprised to find out such a species exists. When you think of cave creatures, bats and salamanders may come to mind. Translucent one-inch shrimp, not so much. But the species has a fascinating conservation history that extends into now. In the 1970s, the shrimp was declared extinct. There had been no sightings for years. And there's one dominant theory that explains why.
Through the 50s, the 60s, early 70s in the United States, water quality was very bad in many, many rivers.
Including the rivers that ultimately feed the underground waterways of Mammoth Cave. The Clean Water Act, which addressed growing concern about water pollution, was amended in 1972. Then, 7 years later, in 1979, a cave scientist found something interesting. One freshly dead Kentucky cave shrimp. Soon after, another scientist found three live shrimp. The species has recovered into the thousands, but they are still considered an endangered species. Helf says there's still so much we don't know about the Kentucky cave shrimp, so scientists need more information about how to help them.
While there's been a lot written about them, I'm not certain that some of these things are known to our satisfaction. For instance, what is their preferred habitat? The place where they've been found to be most abundant has been these sort of pools.
To find out the answer to this question, and many others, Helf says the Parks Department has developed new monitoring protocols dealing with the tallying of the cave shrimp population. Often that resolves a researcher doing exactly what we're doing today, going deep into the cave streams with bright lights and taking a look at the habitat.
We're not only monitoring the organisms themselves, the cave shrimp, we're also monitoring the water quality. We're deploying small sensors in the water to look at flooding that goes on in their habitat. We're also monitoring water temperature. We also monitor...
Once there's more data on their numbers and patterns, scientists will have a better idea of how to make sure the species survives. So now, an obvious question. Why spend so much on such a small species that most people will never know exists? Toomey and Helf say there are two answers to that question. One that's more practical. Here's Toomey.
Cave shrimp are responding to the water quality. And that's the water we're drinking. This is water we're drinking. If we protect the water that we're drinking and don't go in there and actively try and hurt the cave shrimp are going to be fine.
And one that's a little more emotional from Helf.
If these animals disappear, the caves lose something of their mystery. It fires the imagination to know that these animals are there, to know that they exist in this dark habitat that I'm never going to get to. But how cool is it that there's this cave shrimp that doesn't have any eyes that feeds on we don't know exactly what.
And that, as I told Helf and Toomey, is the reason I was there too. I'm Ashley Stevens in Louisville.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.